Hey, everybody, look who it is. We've got Nathaniel Gillis with us today, and he's one of the top demonologists in the field. If you haven't seen his podcast here on Leak Project before, I guess you've been without internet because we've done a lot of shows in the past and go back right. And watch some of the shows. But today, Nathaniel is going to share some of the latest research with us. And I was talking to him a bit off air about these entities that appear to be able to come through from somewhere else and perform what some people might consider miracles or miraculous events, fascinating events, unexplained. And you'll hear the, oh, it's extraterrestrial, it's extraterrestrial. But is it? Is it extraterrestrial or is it interdimensional? Is it super terrestrial? What's the latest research you've done, Nathaniel? Thanks for being a guest on Leak Project. It's great to see you, man.
Well, you know I love you, brother. It's always a pleasure. And hello, Leak Project. I've missed you all, and it's just great to be back on with the Leak Project family. You know,
chances are you've been here before. The chaos in the markets, oil, stocks. Just when you thought it was safe and interest rates were rising, new threats come out of nowhere. Tensions are boiling from Asia to Europe. Adaption's key to safeguarding your wealth. You may not have considered gold before. It's not speculation. It's insurance. And right now, you need some insurance. Noble Gold Investments has been protecting investors from disaster for years with precious metals. So if you're concerned, it might be time to take a fresh look at gold and silver. Gold is a proven safe haven shield for your portfolio. If it helps, Noble Gold Investments is offering a beautiful, solid silver 3-ounce American Virtue coin with its new IRAs this month. If you open your Noble Gold Investment IRA or 401k rollover, you can claim your coin today. Go to leakprojectgold.com right now. That's leakprojectgold.com.
There are researchers like myself that are leaning more towards the interdimensional hypothesis. Not just because that's just the newest theory, but because the evidence suggests that. And the research that my colleagues and I have been doing and will be doing here in the future is centered around the esoteric nature of the phenomenon. Why is it that there are cases where there are skin anomalies in abduction accounts where the skin manifests esoteric symbolism or scarifications that mirror some of the sorcery we witnessed in antiquity? Why is that occurring? It would not make sense unless we extract ourselves outside of the ET hypothesis and start wondering, okay, are these the ancient gods? Are these mages? And why is it again that over and over and over and over again we keep witnessing what seems to be sorcery involved with the phenomenon? And I'll touch on that a little bit, but that's what we're looking at. Certainly there is something spiritual about all of this. There's something a lot more connected to witchcraft, sorcery, and incantations. It's the dark arts. And that's really what I've been researching as of late. And the people that I'm going to be working with here next year and in the future, I'm hoping that we will start to pursue that narrative and investigate that theory because it fits. It all fits. And the problem, though, is I'm not sure that the people are ready. A lot of people, especially in the truth, we want disclosure. Do we really want disclosure? Do we really want to know the nature of this phenomenon? Because it's possible that it would shake us to the foundations.
But since you said that, let me jump in for a minute, because I am taking notes, and you brought up something I found very interesting. You brought up the ancient gods and demonology. So I was thinking about even using that as a title, because that seems to kind of encompass this podcast. Tell us more about the connections you've made with the ancient gods and these entities that some people call ETs, some people call demons, some people call into their own aura through rituals and sorcery, as you describe.
Well, anybody that knows my research or wants to, you can go through Leak Project and see our shows. Most of my work has been centered around these interconnectivities They're glaringly obvious. It's not an accident that Albert Bender, one of the earliest ufologists, was building altars in his home in order to contact these beings. It's not an accident that John Dee and Edward Kelly were performing rituals and seeing small UFOs flying like clouds in the room in what they called little men looking out at them. Yes, it's not an accident.
Tell me about that. Where'd you get that info?
It's research. All you have to do is look up John Dee and Edward Kelly, but that's a fact. That's not a theory. They documented it as much as they could.
Clouds go into the room and then
shaped like a UFO, and little, that they're called little men, were looking out at them as it flew around. Now,
I've never heard that before, man. That's freaking awesome.
Right. Well, again, in ufology, what they're trying to do is strip this subject from any form of esotericism, because what this does is it leads back to a historical narrative, and that doesn't fit the ET hypothesis. What kind of an extraterrestrial would manifest because of incantations makes no sense in their blueprint of reality. And yet, even in the Skoll experiment in the 1990s, the Skoll group, they were trying to contact, they had psychics and magicians, all kinds of people joined that experiment. But they were trying to contact these entities and spirits and deceased loved ones. And when they did, they had an image of what looks to be an alien gray, what they call an alien gray, that manifested to them. Large bulbing eyes just staring at them. And then in one day, this is wild too, one day during one of their experiments, they opened up a portal, and downstairs in the basement, an entity teleported its own body and was chasing people around the room in the basement, speaking with its own voice. And when that happened, they shut down the entire experiment, because there was a profound, unspeakable terror filled the room. And so they realized, just because we have opened the door for these beings does not mean we have the ability to close it. And so they just stopped everything in hopes that, okay, maybe they, no other entities will come in, and yet they were still pouring in. So it's not an accident. And a lot of my research now, and this is just coming from me because I've been talking to these people, there are other researchers, especially in the UK, that are coming around to this. And they've been doing their own research from a different, not a different perspective, from a different path. And they're coming to the same conclusions that I have, and some of the same conclusions that the Collins elite came to in their research. Now, that's where we are. Again, my hypothesis is not that they're ETs or that they're demons. I think that there's something completely different that has been using both theories and both masks as propaganda in order for us to compartmentalize the phenomenon. It's no different than a serial killer who has the same pathology, the same victimology, the same ritual in every murder. And yet all he does is change his name. That's it. And so that's really what we're looking at in the field. And I think that's what ufology is going to have to adjust to, is realizing, okay, these beings were not responding to probes from NASA. They first responded to esoteric rites.
And that's some people certainly scary. Respond to the probes they get. Could I get a drum roll, please? I'm sorry, dude. I had to. You brought up the NASA probes.
You got to, man. You had to sneak that in, brother.
And I got to stick that in. The probes of the aliens.
I walked right into that one.
You did. Boom. That's okay. I started it.
Yeah.
No, it's really fascinating, man. And you look at the phenomena, and there are a few encounters that I find fascinating that seem to be like physical experiences, like the situation in Brazil with dozens of eyewitnesses that claim that there was this crash land, this UFO crash lands, these extraterrestrials talk to some school kids, they take off, and then certain people see them and they die. And I don't know if they're coming in from another dimension or if they're coming in from another planet or or what. But that's pretty telling. You know, that's pretty fascinating. One of the more fascinating cases, I would say, about, you know, ETs. But what's interesting is, and then there's this one from the late 1800s that describes this UFO that crashes into a windmill in Texas, right? And then they claim to have buried the body somewhere in a Texas graveyard, this ET. But I'm thinking to myself, okay, so you've got a craft that comes here from Zeta Reticuli, as an example. That's a long way away. Imagine all the things you had to weave in and out of to get here.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And then there's a windmill, and boom! It's a windmill. I couldn't avoid the windmill.
Right.
What? And
it makes no sense. It's kind of funny you mentioned that, and I kind of lean towards Jacques Vallée's theory that they were seeding us with technology. And this has always been the paradox that we are existing in, not just researchers and experiencers, but even members of our own government. Now, in the Collins Elite research, there were people from the Department of Defense that were performing experiments, trying to bait the phenomenon into manifesting, hoping that they would have pity on us as a species and give us access to new tech, hoping, oh my God, you know, if we have tech as Americans, maybe our technology will be far superior than China's or Russia. And yet what was happening is they were performing like 10 minutes away from where I live at Wright-Patt Air Force Base. They were performing what's called the Parsons technique. And it was, you know, chaos magic, sex magic, all of this stuff. And they were trying to contact the phenomenon. And according to Nick Redfern and other researchers, they were getting some technology in what are called metamaterials. But what inevitably happens is that the phenomenon will give us something, and then it will require something back. And that is where we find ourselves today.
What do we need to give them in return?
We don't know yet. I do know that even people that used to work at Skinwalker Ranch will never go back there because with as many successful experiments as they performed, the phenomenon would hijack their consciousness, or it would just hitchhike and then follow them home and destroy their lives. Bigelow said, I'll never go back. And so the problem is somewhat like the phenomenon is leaning on the human condition. We seek transcendence. We seek technology. And so it seeds us with that. And then when we reach out again, and that's when it begins to access us and stretch itself into our world. But, you know, it's an age-old story. Jack Parsons tried to do this. Everybody's been trying to do it. But the real scary thing here for me and my colleagues is like, okay, there are people in our government and even people in the field who are teaching people how to be practitioners, not experiencers, but to actually be practitioners with the phenomenon. And so this is when you get into a deeper level of esotericism where it's like, okay, what are they trying to get us to practice? And why is it that it's less about technology to them and it's more about sorcery in a sense?
A lot of the flights, space flights with NASA, they have specific gods that they name the rockets. And yep. I'm wondering if that's also, okay, so the pop culture phenomena, you give us the minds of people, and in return, we will give you technologies beyond your wildest dreams. Let's make an exchange. Here's the technology, and our technology will influence them, and you can have all the wonderful technologies that we offer you. And you don't have to worry about a thing. We're just going to influence everybody. Welcome to the team.
Absolutely. And that's been proven throughout history. I mean, with John Dee and Edward Kelly, they were scrying in mirrors and this image appeared to them. And it looked to be a beautiful young woman. And this beautiful young woman was trying to get them to do things for her. And I'll give you something in return. And so what the phenomenon began to do is tell them things that they did not know and would not have known outside of contacting the phenomenon. And so this is where we get into guides, we get into psychics, we get into, okay, what is really telling us this information? Sure, it's correct. Sometimes it is something, but mostly, yeah, okay, wow. So there we go, sweet background. So how can we vet them is the theory? Because what happened with John Dee and Edward Kelly is once they were baited into, okay, wow, she told me something that I didn't know, and it was actually true. Meanwhile, the phenomenon is luring them deeper and deeper and deeper into some kind of cohabitation or some kind of symbiotic relationship. And when it was all said and done, the entity told them they should swap wives. And they didn't want to do it, but when they performed that act, they went back to scrying, and suddenly the entity is no longer a young, beautiful woman. Now it is a haggard-looking corpse, and it makes fun of them and laughs at them. And so they realize, okay, there's a game being played here. And even though some of the information they were given was true, the entity had other plans in mind. And I think that's where we are.
So how far have you gotten with research with Edward Kelly and John Dee? How much do you know about them?
Well, okay. So when you get into esotericism, here's the problem. Especially in antiquity, even that time frame with John Dee and Edward Kelly, we did not have the scientific prowess we have today. So there was no scientific method where we can go there with an EMF meter, right, and actually document scientific facts and data. And so all we had was you know, their documentation. Okay, they write about it, they draw pictures, they write in their diaries, they have witnesses. Well, fast forward to the 21st century, now we have that. And so now what even the Collins Elite were doing, and now what some other researchers are doing that are just, I'll tell you about that later, I can't get to it now. But what they're doing now is they're performing experiments hoping that the phenomenon will manifest. And they could record energy signatures, record molecular abnormalities within the environment when the manifestation takes place. In one of the key examples, this is going to blow your mind. I think I've already told you tonight, but this, guys who are going to watch this, listen. We now have scientific evidence that ufology itself is linked to sorcery, to witchcraft, to dark magic. It is not a figment of our imagination. In the Collins Elite research, they were traveling to the United Kingdom and collecting soil samples that were within the structure of crop circles, not fake crop circles, real authentic crop circles. They would take them back to their research studio, or was it a research area? I forget. Anyways, yeah, they would go back to the university. I think it was Manchester. And they would look at these soil samples and investigate them and document them and compare and contrast similarity, all that. And in these soil samples, they discovered a strange cellular abnormality. It was an anomaly. And so they documented that and said, okay, compared to regular soil, which the phenomenon did not manifest to, this is abnormal. There's something strange about this. And so they documented that abnormality. And so they went back to the Pentagon and said, okay, guys, we need assistance. We need you guys to allow us to perform this experiment. Their experiment was to call on sorcerers and warlocks to go into a controlled environment with soil in that environment and to perform dark magic. And when the phenomenon manifested through those incantations, the Collins Elite researchers and physicists then took those soil samples. They took it back to their department and said, okay, let's investigate and document the data regarding these soil samples. And wouldn't you know that the same energy signature was discovered and found, taken from the crop circle, and then from the incantation soil. And so what they came to the conclusion was that the UFOs that were manifesting over crop circles and performing were the same from the same energy source as dark magic.
What about white magic? They didn't perform any white magic. They were just doing dark stuff. And give us an example of dark magic.
Okay, dark magic would be curses, hexes. Something to, I'm telling you, it's bad. Something to affect another person negatively. And again, it's the same signature. Now, there are researchers that I'm going to be working with here shortly next year that have also uncovered another, it might even be the same, that's what we're looking at, another energy source or energy signature in crop circles. And these researchers have connected that energy signature to a ports in ontology. So it's the same phenomenon. Now, the reason, obviously, everybody who's going to listen to this, you realize why this is profound, why this is germane to the conversation, because now what it does is it links the phenomenon underneath the umbrella of one intelligence, not three or four. And the theory is, yes, that there is, again, a proto-intelligence at work.
Well, here's the thing, though. So when people have gone to these crop circles and laid down in the crop circles and done experiments in a laboratory with the actual stems and, like, what are they called? The chalks, or the way that they explode internally, you can see that it's not just bending them down with the 2x4. They actually, something happens. Them. Yeah. And there's actually some very, according to the research that I have seen, like, I think it was Patty Greer that did a lot of research on this. Yep. And she was showing and talking about some of the benefits that could be considered health benefits to being in those environments. And so you're talking about the soil samples, though, and you're saying that the soil, they did a signature, they're testing the soil and it's identical to the soil from the actual crop circles?
Yeah, so there were abnormalities on the cellular level, cellular level, that were identical. And so the question was asked, why? Number one, why is sorcery a part of this phenomenon? Why are these energy signatures the same? And the possibility exists that not only are they the same, but apports are the same. When someone goes to, like, a haunting and investigates, and all of a sudden there's an object on the kitchen table that they didn't purchase, it just shows up out of nowhere. Steve Mara has done tests on that. And he discovered, yes, the same energy source in crop circles, the same energy source in apports, because they have the same cellular structures, now the same cellular abnormalities. Now, what this speaks to, again, is that what we've done throughout history is compartmentalize the phenomenon. And more than that, what it's saying is, listen, there is a single source here. At the very least, they're identical. At the very most, we're dealing with one intelligence that has propagandized the whole world, thinking, okay, this is the mask, it's a mask, it's an alias. And truthfully, it's the same thing.
That's what. Well, does it have to be the same thing, or can it be something that's using the same type of technology or influence to capture that signature, or to give that signature that's captured, I meant to say?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. That would work if it was like one signature, and then you find something else that has the same signature. But if we're looking at all four of them with the same signature, and then you look at the behavioral patterns and manifestations are all similar. You know, we have experiencers saying that, you know, my guides or my aliens, my beings are coming out of orbs. You look at Dr. Barry Taft's work when he had full-bodied apparitions coming out of orbs too. These behavioral patterns, they're so interconnected. Where, okay, for instance, how many times have we heard about people who are abducted by UFOs or aliens and UFOs? They get home and they see symbols carved into their mirrors or into their walls, and all of a sudden you have a malevolent haunting taking place.
Remind people of one of the first interviews we did. You were describing this gentleman that you know or knew that had these markings embedded in his skin.
Correct. Well, I had done a lecture on skin anomalies, both with possession cases and in UFO abduction accounts. And so the gentleman reached out to me. We're talking about his father, who was a famous remote viewer. His father would leave his body, meet with his guides, and his guides would give him information, again, baiting him. You know, we're going to give you some information, and it'll be accurate. And so he would get back into his body and then call like famous politicians and celebrities. He would charge them money and say, okay, you know what? Maybe your polling's off in this area, or maybe you should go after this certain population more than the other. And so he did that for years, and until one night he goes into a trance. And he told his son it was just a regular night. You know, he met his guides. And it was so strange about this as well. It's really strange. He described his guides as being in a metallic room. And they had flanked him, he said. And he had a password. And whenever he would meet his guides in the past, he would ask for the password. They would give him the password. He would know, okay, I'm where I should be, with who I should be with. And then they would begin to discuss things and get guidance. Well, at this time, these beings didn't give him a password. They had intercepted him. That's one theory. Or in fact, another theory was that these were never guides in the first place. But anyway, so he's talking to these beings. And when he realized that these beings were not his guides, or they were lying to him and deceiving him, he said they turned into something that looked completely inhuman. And next thing he knows, he slammed back into his body. And his son tells me this word for word. And there's photographic and video evidence of this as well. But he said, my father was stumbling down the stairs. He's incoherent. He's sweating profusely. And he's not talking to us. And he's like, we're trying to get him. Okay, dad, what's going on? And he basically has a mental breakdown, falls apart, has a massive heart attack. When they get him to the hospital, they're looking at his chest, and from underneath the skin to the surface, these beings had carved, not into him, but out of him, they had carved three religious amulets. That doesn't seem alien to me. It seems, again, it's another esoteric interconnectivity.
What are the amulets?
One was a cross. One was the Star of David, and in one photograph, there is an arching Egyptian hieroglyphic. So we've seen this not just in whatever this subduction account was, but we've seen this in hauntology as well. Now, all of this stems, again, from sorcery, carving amulets. Now, the problem with demonology here is that because of our religious traditions, we've separated various philosophies, different traditions in and of themselves. What these beings are doing is completely different than that. They're combining all of them. And it's a very strange phenomenon. But again, I can't stress this enough for the people who are going to be watching and listening to this. This didn't stem from NASA. This did not originate from some rock or asteroid. These rituals and all of these amulets were found in Mesopotamian texts, which leads me to believe not only are the energy signatures the same, the rituals are the same, the symbolism, they're the same. And it just makes me believe, I digress, but it makes me believe again that we're dealing with something that's much more ancient than some would like to believe.
Dude. I was just thinking for a minute, what if it's the Yama? But I don't know. I think I experienced the Yama once on a Salvia Divinorum trip. And it was one of the scariest experiences I've had in my life. Remind me to do a podcast on this in the future. I was reading just for a minute yesterday about how somebody had a Salvia experience and they lived 40 years in an alternative reality. And I was like, oh, whoa. When I did it the first time, I felt like I was in a reality that was like, that was it. I thought I was going to be there forever. Like time was not an object. And Nathaniel, it was one of the scariest experiences I've ever had in my life. I literally think I was in hell.
Well, I do believe that there is seemingly two different intelligences that exist around us. One is good. One is good that is trying to stop us from contacting that which is dark. And I'm glad it didn't happen, but this gets back to, you know, what exactly are these beings that we meet? People keep bringing up ayahuasca and lamb and, you know, in the field, okay, you know, Aleister Crowley took a cocktail of potions to meet that alien looking entity. It was literally like, it's not just an incantation, but he ingested things. And in that that trance-like state, he encountered an entity. So there are entities that exist out there that we can't have access to, but that doesn't mean we want to have access to them. You know, I mean, I can remember back in the day, like I say back in the day, I'm 35, but maybe 7 years ago, I encountered an entity in my dreams.
I thought
I was a young lad back in the day. Yeah, you know what I mean? Well, I was just, whippersnapper. But, you know, I was sleeping, and it's like 2 a.m. I just got off work. I worked second shift, and there is this featureless shadow figure that is just on top of me. And I originally thought it was my ex. She was my fiance at the time. So I thought it was my ex. And I'm thinking, okay, this is weird. And it was in the nightmare, you know. The entity is in my nightmare straddling me. And I was so terrified. I woke up thinking, okay, if I wake myself up, that's fine. I'll go to the bathroom and I'll get some water or something, come back to bed. Everything's good to go. Well, when I shook myself awake, to my astonishment, the entity was literally on top of me. Like it was in my nightmare, but it was also physically on top of me in reality. And I remember hitting my ex in the back because I kept saying, is that you? Is that you? Is that you? And finally, that entity just took one leg over and then out into the darkness. So there is this intelligence. And this is, again, demonology has a lot to say about this phenomenon, whether people like it or not. We call them dream demons. The entities that would induce people into dreamlike states, hello, alien, and then do things to them. And then when that person wakes up the next day, they think, okay, that was just a nightmare. In reality, no, that was it. Not a nightmare. That was exactly what happened to you. And yet the phenomenon will trap real memories. Oh, well, that's just a dream. Who cares? It's what's been happening throughout history. And then, you know, some of these women I've talked to will go to work and they'll have ligature marks, or they have scratches, bite marks that directly correlate with the experience they thought was just a dream.
Dude, real quick, my friend Maleva, Grandpa Maleva, Hopi, he's got like physical markings, physical experiences that you are describing that he has mentioned to me off air about how a lot of stuff you talk about he has experienced. And he'll have these anomalies in his front yard that will come into his house or that will be a few hundred yards away that are UFOs in the sense that they're unidentified flying objects, but they're not like anything you've ever seen. They're bizarre. They're like shape-shifting and doing circles and changing colors and forms. And it's just weird stuff. And he's got an implant in his hand. He showed the x-rays. He has no scars on his hand where the implant is. Magnets stick to it. Somebody said, Rex, ask him if he got shot by a BB. Look at it. It's not a BB. It's got a different shape to it. Do BBs stick? Are they magnetic?
Yeah, that's that swamp gas argument we always talk about.
Dude, that's a sick. Like,
come on. No.
It's an intense swamp gas, man.
Yeah, right. What in the world? Well, let's get into this real quick because I don't know how much time we have, but it's been a while. The thing is with ufology, it's possible that the phenomenon has manifested UFOs we would actually believe in. And so this is when I do lectures, especially even on Lee Project with you guys, I talk about how the phenomenon evolves according to our awareness of it. So it's the same way in witchcraft and sorcery. Now, regarding ufology, when Kenneth Arnold told the world that he saw UFOs skipping like flying saucers, the entire pop culture, the zeitgeist all over, is like a dark cloud of deception in the imaginations of the regular working man who, you know, blue collar or even academics, oh, flying saucer. And then next thing you know, when the phenomenon manifested, it's a flying saucer. And yet when you look at the actual documentation of what Kenneth Arnold said, he never said it was a flying saucer. He said that they were UFOs, but that they skipped like flying saucers. And yet when the phenomenon manifested again, it was like, okay, flying saucer. Okay, boom. I'm abducted by a flying saucer. And so the question I've been asking as of late is, are some of these UFOs just mirroring what we would be willing to believe in? And is it possible that we've never truly seen a real UFO in the sense of what does it truly look like? It's got lights on it. Well, so do planes. Can I get into this real quick too?
Before yeah.
I,
Please. Okay.
So my brother was working for a think tank years and years ago where he was in charge of collecting data that they were this company was receiving from cameras that were putting all around the country looking for UAPs. And one of the videos that they captured was it looked like a plane. It had wings and it's flying and stuff. And then when they slowed the footage down, they noticed that it came out of nowhere. It just manifested. And the entity that manifested first was not the same shape or color of the entity that it began to create itself into. Rex, this is chilling. And so the shape of the UFO in the beginning, when it manifested, it began to change and evolve. And at the end of the video, you see it looking just like a plane. And so to the naked eye, that's a plane. But truthfully, that was an entity. And so their research, they concluded that there are many UFOs that are not spaceships, but they're living entities in and of themselves. This would explain a lot of things. But so I think that's a fascinating concept.
You know, yesterday, I do an interview with Jesse from BP Earthwatch. You need to get on his program. You guys would have a great collab. Maybe we could all talk because he has a wonderful group of listeners that, you know, listen to his show. And he brought up in Phoenix, 2013, he saw 16 UFOs that flew very low over him that somebody thought was Hopi shields, but the Hopi don't refer to them as that. Somebody kind of made up that term. It was very similar to what you just described. That's why I brought it up, because I just talked to him yesterday and then you mentioned that. And I'm like, bank, there's something very similar there. There were thousands of people that saw these things. It wasn't just him. It was on the news the next day. They showed a little video clip, but the video clip they showed was most likely not the actual event there, because he said that wasn't what he saw. What he saw was a lot lower. But the next day they have this thing on the news and they got to show lights.
They always do. Right? Yeah. Flare. Something. It's like, what? Yeah. What was that, by the way? What? I'll subscribe to his channel real quick.
The Real BP Earthwatch.
Okay, The Real BP?
Yes, The Real BP Earthwatch. His name's Jesse. God. Nice guy.
Awesome. Really, yeah. Just subscribe, Jesse. No, I'm kidding. I did. but this gets back to even, and I hate to keep beating a dead horse, Rex. But when we're
why not? Hey, what are you going to do today? We're going to beat a dead horse.
We'll beat a dead
Where did
horse.
That term come from? I'm just, no we're not okay. Live. I'm going to upload this as is on Patreon. Folks, you can sign up on Patreon for $1, by the way, and get access to hundreds of hours of exclusive content. But we're also going to upload it on YouTube. I'm just going to edit it out a little bit and add a cool sponsor promo, because I have some wonderful sponsors that help with the shows and great products. So, oh yeah.
That's awesome. You know, getting back to this idea of what is a UFO, there have been accounts where the UFO manifests and it manifests in a way that would make us think that it is extraterrestrial. And yet there are people that it's manifested to who have looked at the design of the craft. And there are certain characteristics it has that would think, okay, you know, like maybe this craft is something from a higher species or a more intelligently designed species. It's some kind of technology that's beyond us. And then they would see rivets on the side, or they would see something in that shape, in that manifestation, where it was like, wait a minute. This technology is trying to manifest as something incredible. And yet there are nuances of it that's connected to technology we had 100 years ago. And so both of those traits combined made a lot of people think that a witness is, okay, that's not a real ship at all. It's something that wants to appear as a UFO to us, or appear as something that we would accept as extraterrestrial. This gets back to, again, this lie that, okay, well, the phenomenon has a new, it's a new origin. That's not true. In my mind, the phenomenon wants us to believe it's a new entity. It's a new mask, right? And that's really what it is. It does not, again, it does not want us to look back in the past and say, okay, it's always been here. Because what that forces us to do is acknowledge case studies that are not all positive. Right? And so we'd have to look at various traditions and look at what they experienced and what they documented. And so that's where I think we are, is that there is an intelligence that is using propaganda to fund what I call manufactured consent and perception management.
Even our genetics are perception management. Mm-hmm. And when our genetics start to get out of control, when we start to perceive more than our genetics were originally designed to give us the ability to perceive, then it's behavioral modification. It's behavior management.
Pretty much, brother.
Wow.
You know, this gets back to when you have experiencers that have suffered some of the most profoundly disturbing events. I mean, I've talked to people where these beings threw them in a pool of corpses, where the beings have pulled them out of their own bodies to where they're in two places at the same time. And we've had that in demonology. We've had that in witch era literature. But the phenomenon, again, the phenomenon has entered a new character in the program. See, this gets back to psychics and all this stuff. When you're dealing with so-called guides that want to tell you, okay, I'm a deceased loved one, okay, you have to compare that loved one and what that being manifests as to the historical record of what you know and have known about that person. Because a lot of times these beings will mask themselves in the image of someone they know you would trust. And what's happened throughout history, even with John Dee, once again, even when I was 8 years old in that haunted house, manifested as a little girl. Why? Because it knows that is who I would believe in and who I would trust. And at the end of the day, what's happened through in the past, at least, is the phenomenon, it'll manifest as someone again we love and believe in, and then it'll follow that narrative enough to get us to believe in them, and then it'll curve in a direction that's completely antithetical to what Dear Aunt Edna would do and say. Is this making sense? Then what that being that, so the image does not match the historical record of what we know. So for instance, there was a guy named Ted Rice. He was, I think he was 10 or 11 years old, and he's in his room, and his deceased grandfather manifests to him. Okay, you know, yeah, of course he would. He's dead, and so his grandson Ted Rice is looking at him, thinking, okay, my God, I have my grandfather back. I can't believe this. Nobody's going to believe this. And so for 25 or 30 minutes, whatever, this entity's saying, okay, I'm your grandfather and all this, and then it tries to assault him. And so again, what we're learning now, at least some of researchers, the other researchers that just completely trust the phenomenon, no, but for us who are questioning it, who are not willing to be deceived by it, to push back and say, you know what, some of this doesn't make sense. What we're learning is exactly what the Bible tells us. Forgive me for mentioning the Bible, but it tells us to test the spirits. How do we test them? Here's how we test them. Does that line up? Because inevitably, what has been happening is that these beings will use the mask of someone we trust. And then when it veers off, only then do we realize, wait a minute, I've been hoodwinked. That's not my grandfather at all. I mean, I had a case study where about 2 years now, I was doing a show, and a lady had reached out to me because she heard my work. And this individual was telling me about how she was in bed one night, and her husband appeared to her, walked through the room and everything, and knelt down beside her, and they had a physical connection, I should say. And so afterward, he gets off the bed and walks back to the left side of her, and he keeps looking at her. And so she said, that's when I felt this sleepy, dreamy slumber fall on me. And she's looking at his facial features. There were little things that were off. And when she realized that this was not her real husband, this was just an entity that wanted to appear as her husband, then the entity could no longer manifest as that mask because she saw through it, Rex. And when she saw through that mask, it dissolved into a smoky apparition and floated out into the hallway. That's when she realized that her husband had been sleeping next to her the entire time. And she said, then she realized, I knew she was sleeping next to me. So there's a profound amount of perception management here. And I'll get to a point here in a second, hopefully. But the problem that we're facing is we used to have a way to vet them. And then the program learned that we were learning. And it evolved according to our awareness of it. And then it introduced a character that we can no longer vet. And my friends, that's the E-team. Come on, give me some love, Rex.
Hello, high five.
That's the E-team.
Here's one now, thing, man. Okay.
I'm getting passionate, Terrence, man. We're done. Terrence,
it was about time. Welcome to the club, buddy.
Old days back.
Passion. It's a requirement here to hang out on Leak Project.
Oh, man. This is Nady Light compared to what I used to be on the show, right?
Yeah, man. You know what, though? We're going to go back and watch those classics, and they're embedded in the universe, man. So 100 years from now, 200 years from now, 1,000 years from now, we'll be watching this in the pods as being – anyway, it's going to be weird 1,000 years from now. We could – in 5 years, people are going to go in pods, and they're going to go in there for – there's going to be experiments within 5 to 10 years where people are going to go into the pods, and they're going to be offered perpetual life in the pods, and all that information is going to be uploaded to the cloud, dude. It's going to be a trip. It's going to be weird, but it's just wait. It's happening. Last year, I said we're going to have AI politicians and AI CEOs. Well, guess what? I just read an article about an AI CEO. Next year, you're going to see AI politicians. Mark my word. Not in the U.S., but there are going to be some nations that are going to be like, you know what? We're going to try something different. We've got this new robot that's connected to this open AI, and it's a new project we have here. We're going to see how well it works. And it's going to be really effective, and people are going to freak out about how amazing it is. They're going to decide that they want it too. It's going to be weird. It's going to be like Terminator versus
sci-fi.
It's going to be fun, man. Yeah, I'm going to be Blade Runner, though. I'm hanging out in Blade Runner.
Awesome, dude. That would fit you pretty well, honestly. Yeah. But, you know, that's the problem we're facing now is that this intelligence – see, the mask it wears is designed to manufacture consent. And because we can no longer test it based on a historical record of what it wants to manifest as, you know, well, I'm Uncle Bobby. Are you really Uncle Bobby? Oh, of course I am. Then, okay, how do we test it? Now what's happened is whatever we're dealing with, it is more like a program in the sense that it evolves according to our awareness of it. Now, I talked to a lady not too long ago. She said that the phenomenon, whatever, was abducting her as a child, and her worldview at that time in her life was rooted in cartoons and comic books. And so when it first manifested to her as a cartoon, because that's what she was familiar with. That's what, you know, oh my God, I trust them. I've seen, that's my favorite character. And she said, you know, they perform experiments and stuff on her. But the point that I'm making though, is as she matured, there came another time when they came to abduct her, and she said that she was taller, she was older, more mature, in a different grade in school, and yet it still manifested as a cartoon character. And she said, now I'm taller than I used to be. This is what she did. I'm taller than I used to be. And that entity is looking at her, and he's looking at her in a way where she said it was almost like it was realizing that the mask it was wearing was no longer believed in by her. That is profound, my friend. That's when she said, now its eyes begin to contort back and forth, almost as if it was measuring the amount of belief she had in its image. I got chills. And when it realized she doesn't believe in this anymore, gone. Now, it's crazy, but this is the cutting edge of the research that's being done. I think it's fascinating. The idea that we have to test them. This is not a – uh-oh, we froze up again, didn't I, buddy? But yeah, we've got
okay. Don't let it pattern interrupt you, brother.
Okay, we have to learn how to test them. But what's happening now is, especially with experiencers, is because there's nothing else to test these spirits with or these entities with. Now what's happening is, well, their message is right. That is where the program has placed us, where the amount of phenomenon we record determines the truthfulness of the message we received from them, which is profoundly disturbing because they can manifest anytime they want to. But the manifestation does not validate the message they're giving to us. That just means they're present.
So where are they? Are they in the dimension? Is that what they're doing? That's what it is. Boom. Okay. Yeah. Let me throw in my theory to your research. And I just uploaded a podcast. It's actually premiering as we're talking right now. And I titled it Lords of Saturn, Fourth Dimension, and Origins of Religion. Mm-hmm. And my theory is that there's this, like, if you research different dimensions, right? Like the first dimension, the second dimension, the third dimension, the fourth dimension. Once we get past the fourth dimension, I don't really understand it. You've got people that'd be like, well, the 73rd dimension is where unicorns fart rainbows and it smells like frankincense and myrrh. It's amazing. You can eat whatever you want. You can do whatever you want.
Oh my God.
There's gold rain that falls.
Yeah, right.
It's the 73rd dimension. Once you get to the 74th dimension, it's better. Now, the reason I bring this up is, let's go back to the dimension states here. We go from the first dimension. It's like dot. Second dimension, it's a line from a dot to another dot. The third dimension, the first dimension is like, you've got the singularity, which is a dot. Then you have the first dimension is basically a line from one dot to another dot. So you've got two dots that make a line. The second dimension, you've got a box. The third dimension, you've got two boxes merging together opposite directions, and you've now got three dimensions, right? We're in the third dimension. Once you get to the fourth dimension, you've now got the tesseract. You've got the hypercube, right? And we can perceive that in third dimension, but we're only perceiving in the third dimension. It's more than what we can perceive, and that's in the fourth dimension. So what happens when we get into the fifth dimension and sixth dimension? I don't understand all that. I can get the fourth dimension a little bit, but it appears there's a connection with Saturn, the cube of Saturn, the Birkeland currents, the solar system, our soul system, the moon, the rings of Saturn, all of this seems to like we're in this third dimensional interface. And I'm wondering if they are interacting with us outside of it where they can come in and out at will. But if they're in the third dimension, they still have to act according to the principles of the third dimension to an extent.
Absolutely. And this is why science, oh my God, Rex, years and years and years ago, I did a podcast and it was kind of funny because the guy called me and was like, okay, what do you want to talk about tonight? And I swear to you, just popped in my head why ufology is doomed to fail. Because much of it is materialistic. Much of it is, okay, yeah, it's just, okay, you know, it's nuts and bolts, and that's not true. This is why, okay, it's not just science. There is something spiritual to this phenomenon. And we've documented over and over and over again. But getting back to the idea of what they're doing, yes, they're playing by rules that we are not aware of, ignorant of. I mean, even in hauntology, we have cases where a malevolent haunting takes place and people will go into like the cupboards or the basement and they will find small toys that these entities have collected from their children. Again, that's what witches used to do in order to hex people. Yes. It gets so dark when you think about it. Why are these energy signatures the same when you're performing dark rituals, cursing people? What's going on here?
Hold on. So we need to do the same experiments, get the same soil and the same conditions, and this time have the opposite type of practitioners. We need to have monks, you know, like we need to have people that are sending positive energy and whether it's a pastor of a church or a Tibetan monk or a Buddhist monk or somebody that practices hermetics like myself.
Correct.
You know, and when I say hermetics, folks, I'm referring to like mind over matter kind of stuff. For example, being very careful the words that you speak, even.
Absolutely. See how, I mean, it's just, it flows, it's interconnected. The question that I've been asking myself, even far beyond, okay, yeah, there are energy signatures, but where are these incantations coming from? Who told the first man or the first woman to say, hey, listen, you need to say it this way? See, what happens, though, people in ufology, if they do not have a background in the paranormal or anything remotely demonological, they don't understand that. They think, okay, it's a ship that's manifesting. They don't realize that there's a possibility here that not only are the phenomenon connected, but it points to, and I'll throw this out there, I'm not saying I believe this, but I'm saying it's worth considering. It points to ufology stemming from sorcery in that the technology they are employing, it did not originate in a laboratory. It originated by combining consciousness in to the point where if you perform the incantation, but your inflection and your voice is wrong, it will not manifest. It's broken, right? That's what it's pointing to. And so it disturbs me because if we neglect this research, if we're going to go along with the love and light narrative, if we're going to go along and say, you know what, we're just going to focus on the nuts and bolts aspect, and we don't even look at research done by demonologists or what we're doing is we're not only disagreeing with history, we're disagreeing with the scientific method the Collins elite performed and documented. And it's to our own demise, I believe. And I forgive me for being passionate, man. No, stop.
You wouldn't be a guest on Leak Project if you weren't passionate. And, you know, it maybe once. And then I'd be like, oh, this guy's really boring, man. No, you got to have passion, bro. That's a good
thing. That's my energy signature, Rex.
We need to do the experiments with the opposite energy. So we need, like I said, we need to do all white magic, positive energy, focusing positive thoughts, similar to the Dr. Emoto's work, where he showed water samples that were blessed and cursed, even with just words on tape on the glass. Then under the microscope, you would see the water under the vial that would look like a beautiful snowflake that said, I love you. And if you said, I hate you, it would look like what one might think of as dis-ease or just amazing. And we're mainly water. So, wow. Sign me up, buddy. I want to go to the fourth dimension as long as I can stay here. I'll take little breaks, check it out, and then come back. But you know what? I want to say this real quick because we're in a duality. So I'm going to offer a little hope right here, folks. Are you spooked out? Do you have the crucifix next to you? Do you have the holy water next to you? The holy Bible? Are you kind of, you know, are you under a blanket right now? You're kind of a little bit spooked out with the one that you love, hugging the one that you love, or maybe you're by yourself and, you know, you turn the light on because you were getting kind of freaked out. You're getting ready to go to sleep. And now you're like, okay, I got to wake back up. This is getting spooky. We are in a duality. Mm-hmm. In this 3D interface, we are absolutely in a duality, which means every action has an opposite and equal reaction. So no good deed goes unpunished, as you were talking about, and in more words than that, in different words. And then there's an opposing faction. There is light that balances the dark. There is
yin yang, basically, right?
I mean, literally yin and yang. I was looking for a more poetic way to put it, but it didn't come to me at the moment. So essentially we just have to, I mean, it's physics, right? And if we didn't, at least what they tell us, if we didn't have something looking out for us for our best interests, we wouldn't be where we are now. We wouldn't be having this conversation. It would be like medieval times when if you didn't follow the rules of the church or give enough money to the church that, you know, they would pillage your house and do things even worse than that.
It's very strange. I mean, even if you get into Mariolatry, which is the worship of Mother Mary, when that religious tradition was born in history, there were dark sorcerers who took that tradition, that ritual of worship, turned it on its head, and began to use incantations that were similar, sympathetic magic, but different word phrasing, all that. And they would get results. And so a lot of this is predicated on belief. This is powerful, Rex. It's predicated on belief. Do you believe? See, this is what I call a protocol of belief. Do you believe I am who I appear to be? When we're getting to incubi cases, even in hauntology, even in ufology, these beings will manifest as lovers and deceased loved ones, all that. But the image that it manifests as has to be believed in order for it to accomplish what it wants to accomplish. Ted Rice, again, an experiencer, the same experience I was talking about before. He's abducted with his grandmother, and his grandmother, this being tried to mate with her. She said, "I've only been intimate with one man." And okay, next thing you know, that entity pulled an image out of her mind. And now her deceased husband, which is the only man she's been intimate with, manifests to her and walks up to her. But here's the point I'm making. These experiencers have to believe in the image in order for their consent to be manufactured by the phenomenon. And guys, I'm using consent loosely, but there's something wrong with this picture here, because it's almost like when you push back on it, when you actually test them, the mask is gone. And in many cases, it just runs and hides. So I do believe this is why Yeshua said, "Who do men say that I am?" That's number one. Number two, this is why Yahweh said, "Don't make an image of me." Why? Because we have images of Jesus abducting people. We never have Yahweh abducting people. They cannot possess the image of Yahweh because he said, "I have none."
Right on. Nathaniel sure did bring the A-game today. And thank you so much for watching, everybody. Make sure to hit the bell for all notifications. Subscribe to Nathaniel's YouTube channel. Also on here, I'll leave the link in the video description box. And if you want to listen to this in full, and I know you do, uncensored, ad-free, unedited even, just go to patreon.com. Guess what? You can listen to this and hundreds of hours of exclusive content for $1 a month. It's a pretty good deal, right? I would say countless hours of entertainment for $1 a month. That's a decent price. So if there's a guest or a topic you'd like to discuss and you sign up over on our Patreon page, you can leave a recommendation in the comment section and I'll get back to you. And I'll probably get back to you here in the comment section on YouTube. So thank you, everybody. Have a beautiful day. Be well. Be excellent to each other. Be prepared, not scared. And be the change you want to see.